သတင်းစီစဉ်ကကြိုဆိုပါရယ် PVTV အစီအစဉ်
美国国安顾问沙利文表示，拜习会面后，中国未减援助俄罗斯。美国评估俄罗斯金乌战争失败。美国防部正收集俄罗斯战争罪证据。美国之音专访前国安顾问博尔顿，普京亲乌计划失败，中国攻台野心未减。各位观众大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看美国观察。俄罗斯继续对乌克兰多地发动攻击，在多个战斗激烈的乌克兰城镇，基本物资严重匮乏，急需人道主义援助。同时，美国正在收集俄罗斯战争罪的证据，今天的节目中我们一同关注。亚速海上的俄罗斯军舰周二继续轰炸乌克兰港口城市马里乌波尔。美国国防部官员说，俄罗斯食品、燃料等物资补给陷入困境。拜登总统警告说，俄罗斯有可能对乌克兰使用生化武器。美国国防部官员表示，没有看到直接的证据，但是认同俄罗斯在这个问题上令人担忧。拜登总统将在周三前往布鲁塞尔参加北约的特别峰会，并在周四公布更多的对俄制裁内容。乌克兰星期二要求俄罗斯允许人道救援进入马里乌波尔，并允许平民离城。自从俄罗斯近一个月以前开始入侵乌克兰以来，这座战略城市一直遭到猛烈攻击。乌克兰慈善团体的一名官员在星期二的一项声明中说，乌克兰的人道援助系统已经崩溃，多数遭遇最激烈战斗的城镇没有超过三四天的食品等基本物资。美国国防部新闻秘书科比表示，看到俄军正在犯下战争罪的明确证据，正在帮助收集这方面的证据。科比还指责俄军无差别攻击平民，而且在很多的情况下是蓄意的。欧盟国家国防部长星期一在布鲁塞尔通过一项战略指南，强调在俄罗斯入侵乌克兰之后，大力强化欧盟的防卫和战备。美国组建太空军两年之后，澳大利亚政府新组建的太空司令部在星期二正式运作。澳大利亚国防部长达顿表示，这个新兵种将拓展澳大利亚的太空能力，与盟友一起确保太空的安全与稳定。此举被视为是抗衡来自中国、俄罗斯等太空强国的威胁。他还警告，在中国和俄罗斯发展出时速6000公里的高超音速导弹之后，太空变得更加拥挤，太空竞赛已经展开。达顿强调，在21世纪，太空无疑会变成一个具有更大军事意义的领域。俄罗斯反对派领袖纳瓦尔尼当地时间周二被法庭判定新罪名欺诈罪成立，这可能会导致他的刑期大幅度延长。检察官上周要求法庭将他的刑期延长到13年，并将他转往条件更严苛的刑事流放地。纳瓦尔尼是俄罗斯最有影响力的普京的反对者。2018年，纳瓦尔尼因挪用公款罪被判处缓刑，使他无法参选总统。2021年，他因违反缓刑条件被判处3年半徒刑。他在法庭上抨击普京安排了他遭受的神经毒气攻击。俄罗斯入侵乌克兰之后，纳瓦尔尼在社交媒体上进行谴责，并呼吁他的支持者进行抵抗。俄罗斯已经有至少1.5万名示威者被警察拘捕。白宫国安顾问沙利文说，在他与杨洁篪会晤以及拜登总统与习近平视讯通话之后，目前中国并没有援助俄罗斯的迹象，不过美国持续观察。此外，他认为俄罗斯侵略乌克兰的行动到目前是失败的。详细情况请美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅来介绍。耀毅。
是白宫国安顾问沙利文呢，在这个星期二参加的白宫的新闻简报会，在简报上告诉记者说呢，在这个3月14号，他与中共中央外事委员会办公室主任杨洁篪会晤之后，然后还有上个周五的拜登与习近平的视讯会议之后呢，目前美国并没有发现中国有军事援助俄罗斯的迹象。我们来看一下沙利文在白宫怎么说。
make predictions going forward. What I can tell you is we have not seen since those meetings or since the president's conversation with Xi, the provision of military equipment by China to Russia. But of course, this is something we are monitoring closely. We will continue to monitor it. And the president made clear to President Xi the implications and consequences of any such provision of equipment. And they very well understand one another.
那沙利文也表示呢，在这个乌克兰人民的奋勇抵抗之下，俄罗斯或许能够夺取一些土地或城镇，但是无法攻占整个国家。而俄罗斯军队的表现呢，更是大大不如预期。那么现在在国际严厉的制裁之下呢，俄罗斯的国力是急剧下降，国防以及科技产业逐渐窒息，那俄罗斯将成为国际贱民。那沙利文也认为呢，目前俄罗斯对乌克兰的侵略行动是失败的。我们看一下沙利文怎么。
First, to subjugate Ukraine. Second, to enhance Russian power and prestige. And third, to divide and weaken the West. Russia has thus far manifestly failed to accomplish all three objectives. In fact, it has thus far achieved the opposite.
现在外界有报道说呢，美军正在训练乌克兰军人。沙利文强调这是不实的消息。他说呢，并没有美军在训练乌克兰军人，而在乌克兰境内也没有美军的部队。那此外呢，拜登总统在这本次的欧洲之行将从星期三开始展开，他将会前往比利时以及波兰。那么在比利时布鲁塞尔的时候呢，他将会参加由29个成员国来组成的北约紧急峰会，之后呢与 G7 的领导人会面，并且参加27个成员国的欧盟会议。那么在当中呢，美国以及盟友们将会共同来推出对于俄罗斯的更严厉的制裁，并且呢更加严格来执行现行的制裁。同时呢，美国与盟友也将一起来宣布下一步对乌克兰之军事援助，并且也会宣布更多美国对乌克兰的人道救援，同时增强北约部队在东翼的长期部署。那这个匈牙利的总理奥尔班呢，是已经公开表示反对针对俄罗斯的石油跟天然气来实施进口的禁令。对此呢，白宫国安顾问沙利文表示，其实拜登总统在跟几个盟国一起来宣布对俄罗斯的能源出口实施禁令的时候就已经说过了，因为美国本身就是石油以及天然气的生产国，因此有办法来禁止俄罗斯的能源进口。但我们美国呢，也是可以理解有些欧洲盟友可能现实上并没有办法做到，因此呢，在本次的欧洲峰会之后，美国将与盟友一起来发表联合声明，来加强欧洲能源安全，并且减少欧洲对俄罗斯天然气的依赖。那么在星期五呢，拜登总统将会前往华沙，在那里呢，他会跟波兰的总统杜达举办双边会议，之后呢，还会前往这个难民营来慰问乌克兰难民。此外呢，这个白宫发言沙奇原本在星期三要陪同拜登总统前往欧洲来展开整次的行程，但是呢，在3月20号星期二，他是宣布确诊了新冠病毒，因此他只是取消了陪同前往的行程。卡拉，
好的，感谢耀毅从白宫带来的报道。前美国国家安全顾问博尔顿接受美国之音专访，他认为俄罗斯侵略乌克兰暴露了俄罗斯的许多错误。博尔顿预估，除非普京得到某种军事胜利，否则这场战争将一直持续下去。他同时认为，中国的公开立场是希望和平解决，但实际上正在幕后帮助俄罗斯，并仔细地观察美国和西方国家如何应对这场战争，以更好地算计对台湾和南中国海的行动。
At this moment, Beijing is still yet to call Putin's war as invasion. U.S. officials are concerned that China may provide economic or military aid to Russia.Could you tell us what is China's position and calculations for this crisis in Ukraine? And what is your interpretation of China's ambivalence?
Well, I think China and Russia have grown closer in the past several years. And I think at this stage, you can call their relationship an entente, to use the French diplomatic term. It's not a full-scale alliance, but they've got mutual understandings to reinforce each other's positions. So for Russia inEurope and the Middle East, and for China in the Indo-Pacific and also in the Middle East. I think China is providing assistance to Russia in a number of different ways. Many of them will be covert, but I think it's trying to help Russian financial institutions, navigate the sanctions that have been imposed on them. I think China is prepared to buy more Russian gas and oil to counter the effects of the embargo on that. And I think it's prepared to provide military assistance or to divert military capabilities to aid the Russian effort. So China's public position will be that they want a peaceful solution and that nobody should do anything to make the situation worse. But I think, in fact, there's very close consultations between the two countries, and that China, in ways that are not terribly visible, is definitely behind Russia.
When Putin has become the pariah of international communities, why Xi Jinping is still hesitant to stay away from Putin?
Well, I think this is something that China is watching very carefully. So obviously the reputational damage that Russia is suffering is not something that China wants to see happen to itself. Or certainly Xi Jinping doesn't want to be seen in the same way that Vladimir Putin is being seen. So I think China will try to learn from the mistakes that Russia has made, but it's also looking for mistakes that the United States and the Western alliance have made, all of which is to help China better calculate what it will do if it moves against Taiwan, if it moves in the South China Sea, if it moves against Vietnam or India on the mainland. So this is a learning experience for China in many respects.
What are the common grounds that Xi Jinping and Putin have, and what are the potential conflicts of the two countries?
Well, I think the Entente could develop into an alliance. And what they share is a desire to be free of the institutions and norms of, in commercial and political terms, of the developed world. China has made that clear in the World Trade Organization. When they were admitted 20 years ago, people in the United States and Europe thought that the dealing with the rest of the world in regular commercial channels would change how China behaved. And that has proven not to be true. China, if anything, now is exported its mercantilist economic policy into the World Trade Organization. They both want to be free of the constraints of dealing with U.S. dollars, which is the world currency. Neither China nor Russia has a convertible currency now, and that puts them at a real disadvantage. And they hope that by working together, they can form an economic bloc that can operate independently of the dollar. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think that's their aspiration. And they have many things in common that move them closer together. China is an energy-poor country, whereas Russia has enormous reserves of oil and natural gas. So China's a natural purchaser. Russia's a natural seller. Russia has sold China sophisticated military weapon systems for many years, and that will likely continue. Their shared geographic space in Asia. It makes that a very powerful geographic bloc. And I think that the pressures from the outside world that Russia is experiencing now will push them together as well. So they have a lot in common. There are differences, too. I think it should be U.S. policy to try and split that bloc. That was a successful policy at the end of the Cold War. And the partnership now is very different because China is the senior partner, and Russia is the junior partner, which was very different from the Cold War, where the reverse was true.
How could these two countries be equal partners when Russia's GDP is less than 10% of China's? Would Putin be satisfied to be like a kid brother of Xi Jinping?
Well, I think this is going to be a lot more difficult relationship in that sense than either China or Russia understand at the moment. I think the performance of Russia's military in Ukraine has been so unexpectedly poor that will hurt Russia's position. But it is still one of the two leading nuclear powers in the world, and its nuclear capabilities are something that the rest of the world has to take into account. But I think simply the size of the economy over time will be a dispositive factor. And I think it's going to be very uncomfortable for the Russians. But as of yet, they don't see it that way. I talked to Russians when I was National Security Advisor and said they don't think this direction is going to be satisfactory for Russia over the long term, and I did not persuade them of that. But that will be something that by the time they get committed further to this relationship, it may be impossible to back away.
It has been 3 weeks since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and it is hardly a blitzkrieg for Russia. Do you think Russia is still a world power seeing that? And what kind of main problems of Russia have got exposed in this war?
Well, Russia's made many mistakes. I think probably the biggest mistake was an intelligence failure. They believed this would be a lot easier than it's turned out to be. And I think, you know, most of the Western intelligence assessments also thought that that Russia would prevail more quickly. But the Ukrainians have fought very heroically. They have taken advantage of Russian weaknesses, mistakes in strategy, mistakes in tactics, logistical failures, the Russians unable to provide food or gasoline to their soldiers just a few miles across the Russian border. And so all of this has done enormous reputational damage to the Russian military. And I think that's something that that China is watching, but I think all of Russia's European neighbors are watching this too. So I believe the conclusion is that Putin and his advisors will feel that they have to do something, have some kind of military success to repair the damage that's been done to their military's reputation. Because leaving Ukraine aside entirely, if Russia's military loses its credibility, that means they have only their nuclear weapons really to rely upon. And that's a very significant shift. So unfortunately, I think that means that to find this way to repair the damage that's been done, Putin has to find some kind of military victory. And I don't know how he will define that, and I don't know when it will come. But I think what that means is that the war will go on so that Russia will still be perceived worldwide as a great power.
We have seen some Ukrainian people comparing Putin with Hitler. Do you see the similarities between the two people? And how have you seen Putin's involvement in the past 23 years since he got into power?
Well, I think Putin is clearly an authoritarian figure. I don't think he has an ideology of like Hitler does. As bad as his acts are, they don't come close to the Holocaust that Hitler conducted against the Jews. But the authoritarian nature of Russian society, it's not communist in ideology anymore, but it is authoritarian, is similar to other authoritarian regimes. I first met Putin in October of 2001 when I was at the State Department. I accompanied Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld to Moscow right after the 9/11 attacks. And I've met with Putin many times since then. He's very cold-blooded. He's one of the hard men of history. And he has a very clear idea of what he thinks Russia's national interests are. In 2005, he spoke to the Russian Duma, the parliament, and he said that the breakup of the Soviet Union was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. And that was a mark of reflecting his concern as he had watched the Soviet Union break up after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and should have been a signal to us that he intended to change that and to repair the damage that Russia had suffered. And I think that's really what's motivating him now. I don't think this is irrational. I don't think he's lost track of the real world. I think he values regaining Ukraine, Belarus, and other parts of the former Soviet Union, and this is what he's trying to do.
And besides Putin, another authoritarian strongman in today's world is Xi Jinping. Do you see similarities between Putin and Xi Jinping?
Well, I think they are clearly authoritarian rulers. I think Putin is a much more of a post-communist authoritarian. When the Soviet Union dissolved, Boris Yeltsin abolished the Communist Party. He didn't abolish all the parts of the former Soviet Union. The KGB survived, and many think that, in effect, what's ruling Russia now is what the Russians call the siloviki, the men of power, from the military, from the intelligence services. But it's not a communist party. It's not a communist ideology. It's just authoritarian. Whereas in China, the Communist Party is still the dominant force. Now, it's not so ideologically Marxist as it was before, but it's still a cohesive political organization, and that's where the real power is held. Putin doesn't have anything like that kind of structure, and Xi Jinping's power stems from his ability to control the party and through it the People's Liberation Army, whereas Putin simply controls the military, the intelligence, the power agencies. And in that sense, they operate in different ways. But they have both now established themselves as rulers for life, in effect, in their respective countries. And I think that that enables them to have a closer relationship because they both understand how the other one functions. I think that that China and Russia in recent years have both been very successful in their overt efforts to influence public opinion in their domestic situations, but internationally as well. Some of that has been covert, some of it has been overt. During my time as National Security Advisor, the director of the CIA said to me that she thought that China's clandestine operations of influence operation were much greater than Russia's, and I think the evidence bears that out. I think we're only coming to that understanding late, but I think it's very important for the United States to have the capability to respond to disinformation from its adversaries, but also to explain what America's position is and to tell the truth. And that's something that if I'd stayed in the government, I wish I would have been able to do a lot more on, but it's extremely important. During the Cold War, we saw how important it was to tell the truth to the people behind the Iron Curtain. And that remains important today. And while our efforts are extensive and much more could be done, and I hope Congress understands that.
在采访的下半部分，波尔顿回应了有关习近平预计在中共二十大无悬念的连任，以及有关今日乌克兰、明日台湾的说法。我们将在明天的节目中为您播出采访的下集，请您准时关注。当今真相为重，掌握全球脉动，只要点击 VOA Plus， 手指移动信息即来，追踪政治动向。 体验真实生活，世界各地的声音随时随地轻松获取。现在就下载 VOA Plus 应用程序 ，VOA Plus。
欢迎继续收看《美国观察》。乌克兰网球选手谢尔盖·斯塔霍夫斯基在2013年的温布尔顿公开赛淘汰了卫冕冠军费德勒而一战成名。今天，斯塔霍夫斯基已经成为了基辅军事巡逻队的一名志愿战士。他发誓要保卫祖国，抗争到底，击退俄罗斯军队的入侵。
It won't be long until this will be over. I hope that it won't be long until Russia is going to get out of Ukraine and we will be able to control our border. We will have to build up significantly in terms of our defense. But I think the world as it was before, it will never be the same, no matter the outcome. What are they doing is unhuman. The atrocities, the scale of of unhuman behavior, I would say, the killing of civilians, the orders of shooting civilians. It's in 21st century, I mean, really?
We hear as well.
Good enough, I think. Everybody's fighting their own war. Right now, if I can. Listen, I am here on the foot patrolling for the different scenarios. I'm pretty sure there's a guy not far from here, sitting in his office, remarkably brave, knows what he's doing, and we all believe that he knows what he's doing. I wish I would never have to be preoccupied with these things. I cannot say that I feel comfortable around a rifle. I'm not sure how I'm going to react to shooting at somebody. And this is something, and let's say, even if I will be capable of shooting, killing someone is marking you on your life. So I don't believe that any of the Ukrainians are willingly doing it, but we don't have any choice. If we don't stand up, we don't have a country to defend. We don't have a country to live in.
联合国的数据显示，自从俄罗斯于2月24号入侵乌克兰以来，已经有超过300万乌克兰人逃离家园。出现在镜头里的近50张面孔，只是乌克兰难民中极小的一部分，他们不得不背井离乡来寻求安全的生活。感谢您收看今天的美国观察，我们明天再见。